come down and threaten us.
Is the singularity near?
The military-industrial complex.
The truth is out there.
The seven mountains of the influencers of culture.
To be as gods, you know, catapults to propaganda.
From a mostly secure, undisclosed, split-level location on a cul-de-sac somewhere in the heartland of America, this is A View from the Bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
As Christians, we're told to trust in the Lord Jesus Christ, trust in God, and He will provide for us. As we approach September, which is National Preparedness Month, we are also hearing from Christians who are saying that it's wise to prepare. How far do we go before we're no longer trusting in the Lord Jesus Christ and in God to take care of our needs? Welcome to A View from the Bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert. Our guest is best-selling author of a book you're probably familiar with, The Rabbi Who Found Messiah, but his new book addresses the issue of being prepared for, well, many different circumstances. The book is called Be Thou Prepared, and our guest is Carl Gallops. Carl, welcome to View from the Bunker.
Yeah, thanks, Derek. It's great to be in the bunker with you, man.
Well, yeah.
Thank you for having me.
We tongue-in-cheek, it's the manufactured bunker that sits across in the volunteer firehouse out there at...
Right. But
if they want to know where we are, they don't have any trouble finding us.
I don't know how deep under the earth we are, but I know I went down a long flight of stairs.
The idea of preparedness, and I'll confess, this is something that I've changed my attitude about in recent years. Mm-hmm. I used to have this stereotype, I guess, in my mind that people who were preppers were the kind of guys that you'd read about later doing the kind of odd fellows, let's put it that way. You know, guys who dress in camouflage all the time.
A bit what we would call overlord.
Yeah. You know, guys who are hiding and waiting for the end of the world.
Right.
We've got ours and the rest of the world can just go to.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Why is preparedness something that Christians should take seriously? And what are the biblical, the biblical justification for preparedness?
Yeah, thanks. You've asked four or five good questions there in a row, so let me kind of wade through them. No, you're right, Derek. I think that there is a stereotypical image of a prepper, if lack of a better word, and there are people that take it to the extreme and truly don't have a biblical worldview, so their whole view is on themselves.
They're preparing out of a spirit of fear.
That's right. Out of a spirit of fear and almost a little spirit of selfishness. In other words, I'm going to hoard up, take care of me and mine, and when the balloon goes up, I don't care about the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. But as believers, you know, we have biblical mandates from Genesis to Revelation. In Genesis, we find the world's first prepper, Noah. Spent over 100 years preparing for the wrath that was to come. He knew that. I mean, God had made that clear to him. Well, guess what? God's made clear to us. It's called the Word of God and the Holy Spirit that interprets it to us. And then the signs of the times in which we're living and the convergences of major biblical prophecies in our lifetime. Guess what? We need to be building an ark too. Mm-hmm. But the ark of our life is our trust and faith in Jesus Christ, but also knowing that there may be some rough times ahead. There are already rough times for Christians all over the world.
Yeah. Now, as we record this on August the 26th of 2015, I believe it's 26th.
Yeah.
I lost track of what day I
don't ask me, please.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's time shifted. You're hearing this in the archives.
But down in the bunker, time's different. It's of no concern.
Well, it's a property of E equals MC squared
that's
or something
right.
like
that's
that.
Right.
Clocks move
that's
faster
right.
on the surface. But earlier this week, a former government official in the United Kingdom, an advisor to Gordon Brown, who was the Prime Minister of England during the 2008 banking crisis, said to his Twitter followers, he basically tweeted a series of tweets and recommended start stocking up on tinned food, which is their way of saying canned food, bottled water, have cash on hand because you don't know that the banks, the ATMs, will be functional if things melt down. Have a rally point for your family. Basically, he was telling people things that were they to come from somebody who was an acknowledged prepper, most normal, and I'll put that in air quotes, people would say, oh, okay, he's just being paranoid. But this is somebody who was a member of the government during Brown's tenure who was responsible, he said, for helping to avert the banking crisis in 2008, telling people, hey, look, you know, move out of this. He even said in the Twitter feed that I followed, I looked at this guy's Twitter feed. He was talking about, we moved out of London to get it out of the city because part of the reason for preparing is not just that the stores may not receive their just-in-time shipments just in time. It may also be unsafe for you to leave home in the event of social unrest, which a severe economic downturn might trigger.
Surely, it could spur that.
So here we've got somebody coming from a presumably secular perspective, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. arguing this. How much more, how seriously then should we as Christians
right.
be taking this?
Right. Well, we should be. And listen, for those that are listening that are saying, well, I don't know if I want to get into all this prepper stuff. Listen, if you're a living, breathing human being that's going through life in any manner of success at all, you're already a prepper. I mean, you have a spare tire in your trunk. You wear mm-hmm. a seatbelt. You have insurance. You lock your doors at night. But you go grocery shopping. You say, well, how's that being a prepper? Well, think of it. Mm-hmm. When you go grocery shopping, you usually shop for a couple of weeks, at least maybe a month. Why, what are you doing? You're stocking up. Why? Because you don't want to go every single day back and forth. Why? Mm-hmm. Well, because it might not be there. What I want might not be there. Oh, right. And if there's civil disobedience or if there's some kind of natural disaster or if there's, God forbid, some terrorist attack or a nuke that goes off sure. or an EMP incident, guess what? The stores might not be there. Mm-hmm. The gas stations might not be there. The infrastructure of your normal day life right now might not be there. So what should you do? The same way you live life now, except with a little extra forethought, mm-hmm. and that is prepare. And it's not that expensive, and it's not that hard if you'll start now and do a little extra grocery shopping. Your ministry provides supplies that people can purchase, and so those kinds of things can happen. Do it a little bit at the time, store them up, have some food, have some water. Listen, I live in Hurricane Alley in the United mm-hmm. States, and I've been through Katrina, and I've been through Hurricane Ivan and Hurricane Dennis and all of those devastating hurricanes that have happened in the last 10, 12 years that have just devastated the Gulf Coast. And I've been in a situation where we had no law enforcement for days. They couldn't clear the roads. Law enforcement cars had trees through them. Law enforcement officers' homes were destroyed. They were mm-hmm. taking care of their families. The roof off the law enforcement building, the big complex, was gone, and they were, you know, rounding up prisoners. And I mean, it was a mess for days. No grocery stores, no gas stations, no open roadways, no power. And that went on for several weeks in some areas. But we didn't know how long it would go on. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're in the middle of that. You don't know. It might be months. You don't know. And in the midst of it, what if some terrorist organization decided they were going to add insult to injury? And next thing you know, you're kind of back in the Stone Age for maybe months or years. I mean, these are kind of worst case scenarios, but I've lived through some mm-hmm. of them. Mm-hmm. But we were prepared. I tell folks, look, just prepare for the natural possible occurrences of life where you live. Some people live in tornado alley. Some people live in flood zones, mm-hmm. fire zones, earthquake areas. Just prepare. Have a plan. Have a little extra cash somewhere that you can get to. Have some food. Have some water and or water purification mm-hmm. products. Have some, if you, people that have to have special medications, diabetics, et cetera, or heart problems, have some of that or a way to get to it. Have some specific tools that you might need in a disaster. You know, a chainsaw, an axe, a handsaw, those kinds of things. And just know where these things are, collect them up over time. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing collecting of food and water products, I tell folks, look, just have a storage area, a closet, a dedicated area, and rotate stuff through. And so you go to the grocery store, you buy a thing of peanut butter, buy a couple of extra jars, put mm-hmm. it in your storage closet, and then go through that. I mean, about before it's time for it to expire, and a lot of that stuff keeps for a long time.
Right.
You know, use it in your home, then go back to the grocery store and replenish it. Yeah, and it's very cheap and easy to do that way. Mm-hmm. So it's just common sense, and the Bible commands God's people to be prepared.
Yeah, it's a change of mindset.
It is.
There are things that people who live in the country, grew up living in the country, take for granted.
Yeah.
I didn't realize this, but my mother, who was raised on a farm in the middle of North Dakota, where the winters can, you know, be a little chilly.
They always live that way.
Exactly.
They always raised in a state of preparedness.
You know, several freezers downstairs full of food.
And the vegetables.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact, this was kind of an interesting insight. Several years ago, I took a tour of the big steel beam mill at Blyville, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
The company that made the beams was a supplier to the company I worked for at the time. And they said, we deliberately put our mills in rural areas because we found that the workforce in those areas tend to be more self-reliant mm-hmm. and able to figure out and solve problems without waiting for directions
right.
from supervisors than
right.
the workforce in urban areas. Now, I was raised in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Mother and father both, well, my father was raised there. My mother, again, moved there from North Dakota, thinking that the winters in Chicago would be easier.
Right, right.
anyway, but we saw in Katrina an example, I think, of the mindset that people in cities are raised with. Shelter in place. How often have we heard that? Right. Shelter in place.
Right.
Well, you know, country folk, it's like, well, yeah, we might do that, but we also know that we got some folks out there who might be in trouble in the event of a major winter storm. You mentioned tornadoes.
Yeah.
Just about an hour and a half west of here is Joplin, Missouri, which,
right,
of course, was devastated by a tornado just not
yeah,
long ago.
Yeah.
Of course, the Tuscaloosa and tornadoes down in,
right,
in Alabama a couple of years ago.
And I have family that live right there and
yes,
went through all of that.
Give an example of how your preparedness helped you when Hurricane Ivan came through Florida. How were you able to use your your state of preparedness to help others.
Right. And this is important. And you just said it, Derek. Thank you. This is from the biblical worldview. The reason we prepare, first of all, the scriptures tell us we have a mandate to be reasonably, rationally prepared for anything that life may bring your way. The early church had to deal with famines and pestilence and persecution. Okay. So be reasonably prepared. But watch, we do that because first we need to take care of our families, right? The Bible says that, you know, he who does not provide for his own family is worse than an unbeliever, worse than a pagan.
Mm-hmm.
So take care of our families, but watch, here's why. Because when we are prepared and our families are prepared and our heart is comforted and eased because we know, okay, we've got the food. All right, the disasters just happened, whatever it is, tornado, hurricane, fire, flood, whatever, civil disobedience, civil disturbance. Okay, we're prepared. We can hunker down. We've got food. We've got water, got clothing, got shelter. Okay, we've got means to protect ourselves. All right, we're prepared. Now guess what I'm free to do? I'm free to minister to the world around
mm-hmm,
me. See,
mm-hmm,
from a biblical worldview. So that happened to me and my family, my grown son, and he's got a son and a wife, of course, and we all hunkered down together when Hurricane Ivan came through our area. And by the way, just devastated, just blasted our area. We went right through the middle of that. 160 something mile an hour sustained winds, 193 mile an hour gust for hours and hours and hours. It just devastated the place. But for the hand of God, I mean, our home should have been gone. Everything around it was gone, but we were hunkered down, and there we were. So when it was all over, we came out. It's like Dorothy coming out in Wizard of Oz, you know, landing mm-hmm, in Oz. Like, wow, we're not in Kansas anymore. I mean, we didn't even recognize where we had lived. I mean, our neighborhood, we didn't recognize it. It
mm-hmm,
looked like a war zone. But the first thing that I did in my mind was take assessment. Okay, the roof is still good. We're dry. We're going to be safe. We got a little shelter. Then I started thinking, okay, nothing's destroyed in the house. We've got our food closets. We've got our water supply. We're fine. We've got our clothing. Of course, everything's in the house. We've got the ability to take care of ourselves, you know, weapons, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got all that. So my son, who had a four-wheel drive parked around back and trees all around it, literally all around it, but not on top of it, he said, Dad, it's time now to go help. And I said, you're right. So we loaded up his truck. We got chainsaws and axes, and we put food and water and emergency supplies and things. We strapped guns on our side, and we didn't know it at the time, but we would find out as we got out into the population area that there was no law enforcement. And so we were, we're not pistoleros, and mm-hmm, we're not trying to play cop, and we're not trying to play army man.
don't need no stinking badges.
Don't need no stinking badges. Well, there weren't no stinking badges to be had.
Yeah.
But we weren't trying to be superheroes or anything. We just knew, look, in desperate times, your next door neighbor can turn into a killer. I mean, that's hard to think about, mm-hmm, but we've mm-hmm, seen that happen. And so we strapped on our guns and we put all these supplies with the intention of let's go minister to the needs of hurting people. And as we get the opportunity, we will also give them the love of Jesus Christ. And that's why Christians should be prepared, not to go hunker down in a hole mm-hmm, and say, well, let the rest of the world blow away. I'm going to take care of me and mine. But our attitude should be take care of you and yours first so that you will have peace and strength to help others around you in those times of need.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, everything is a walk of faith. Everything is in the hands of God, because there are those worst case scenarios where, well, like Joplin, you know, you could have had everything you wanted stored, guns, ammo, food, water, clothing, and a tornado hits you directly and it's all gone instantly.
Yeah.
Now you have nothing. Well, ultimately our reliance is on God.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, through people and through other people and often through fellow believers and the church, then God begins to provide. So it's, there's a balance to it all. And I tell folks, don't worry about, you know, people say, I don't want to look like a stupid prepper. Then don't be a stupid prepper. You know, don't be that guy. just be reasonable, rational, biblical, loving, with a biblical worldview, and prepare for whatever may come your way.
Yeah, it's the complete opposite of that classic Twilight Zone episode where the family, the father on the street who's been prepared, and you know he's got his little fallout shelter down in the lower level. Right. I think the episode is called The Shelter, and all the neighbors who knew that he had a shelter who hadn't prepared for themselves.
Guess where they went?
Exactly. Yeah. And of course things got kind of ugly because he wasn't going to let them into his shelter.
Right.
You mentioned something though that I think is important to address. For a couple of reasons, because, again, social unrest is a possibility in these times. We've already seen it break out in a few places. Ferguson, Baltimore, we face the risk of social unrest in the event of a severe economic downturn. You also face the possibility, as you point out, during Hurricane Ivan, which I had forgotten was 2004. It seemed more recent than that.
Yeah, I know. Times.
I think I was confusing it in my mind with Hurricane Ike, because I remember I think it was Ike that was 2007, came through and actually hit the Ohio River Valley. It was still, you know, tropical storm force and didn't affect us in the Indianapolis area so much. But Cincinnati was basically shut down for a couple of days by a tropical storm, which made, you know, it's crazy.
In the heartland of the country.
Yeah. Ivan was the one that had that weird track that basically hit the panhandle of Florida, tracked up through, the states, came back out around the Carolinas somewhere, and then looped back around and hit Florida again.
It did it again.
And it came back up through the Gulf Coast. Yeah, that was a bizarre storm.
Very bizarre.
But
life can be bizarre. That's the purpose of preparing.
Yes, exactly right. But you talk about the lack of law enforcement. But beyond that, we're also getting into a period of history, and we're seeing it probably at its most extreme in the Middle East right now, where Christian communities that have existed since the early second century, the oldest Christian communities on the earth, are being annihilated by the Islamic State and other radical Islamic groups. We saw an example of violence in a church, the tragic shootings in Charleston, South Carolina.
Yes.
Young man went into what he knew was a gun-free zone. How far do we take the idea of preparedness? Does it include preparing with weapons, with firearms?
Yeah, thanks. Well, listen, there are some biblical answers to that and logistical common sense answers. I've been in the ministry for over 30 years. I've pastored one church for 29 years on the Gulf Coast. And prior to that, I spent 10 years in Florida law enforcement. I was a deputy sheriff and criminal investigations, et cetera, for years. So I have, and I've been through, tragedies and devastation. So I have a little authority in what I'm about to say. And that is, look, I know that carrying a firearm, concealed or otherwise, even owning a firearm, for some people, they just don't want to go there. Mm-hmm. And look, I understand that. I sympathize with you. But I tell most folks, if you have any ability to handle a firearm at all, you should at least have something in and around your house or automobile just for day-to-day protection. You know, you don't have to be anxiety-ridden. You don't have to be paranoid about life. But we live in a strange world, and we live in a time when people are doing awfully ugly things to folks, and to be totally unequipped and unprepared. I mean, so your door gets kicked down at 3 o'clock in the morning. You've got children there. You're there, your wife, your husband, you know, and you have no means to protect yourself. And two or three thugs come in with whatever weapons. What you say? Well, I don't believe in guns. Well, I'll just call the police. Well, I've got news for you. The police aren't going to be there when you need them in that instant.
Right.
They'll come afterwards and clean up the mess if there's, you know, but I tell folks, look, there is nothing unbiblical about providing and protecting for your family. In fact, the biblical mandate is protect and provide for your family. And people say, yeah, but, you know, Jesus was a pacifist. He would have been against firearm ownership. Well, they didn't have firearms in Jesus' day.
Mm-hmm.
But right before he was going to the cross, he literally gathered his disciples up. And I'm going to paraphrase a little bit, but he gathered them around and said, hey, guys, come here. Look. He said, tough times are coming ahead, and some of you are going to be hunted down and persecuted. He said, let me ask you, you have a sword, you see? And you know, a sword was a personal protection weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was equivalent to the, the automatic firearm of concealed weapon today. And he said, look, sell your cloak, sell your sandals if you need to, but go get a sword. And Peter said, well, we've got two here among us right now. And I think Jesus smiled. He said, okay, that's good. Mm-hmm. That'll be enough. I mean, we're not fighting a war, but I just don't want you to be totally unprepared to protect yourself and your loved ones.
As our friend Gary Stearman wisely pointed out, Jesus was not advocating an offensive war with those. Otherwise, he wouldn't have healed the ear of the high priest's servant.
Right.
So that was not his point. But for self-defense, for protection, going out into the world where things are not always friendly.
Right. Yeah. And Jesus used a parable that I think this is very telling. And in the context of the parable, he was speaking of spiritual truths, of the attack of Satan, the attack of the enemy. But he said it's like, and I'm going to paraphrase again, but he said it's like a strong man who is fully armed and is protecting his house. And then the evil man comes and tries to break in, but he's thwarted. On the other hand, if the man is not protected, if he's not armed and the evil one comes, then you're wide open to whatever evil he wants to do. Now, the crowds understood that he meant that spiritually, of course, but look at the physical day-to-day, this truth is self-evident illustration he used. And the people got it because it's common sense. Of course you want to protect your home and your family. Of course you want to be fully armed, at least around your house, because evil people, wickedness is real. Evil is real. Mm-hmm. And people will do evil, wicked things to you and your family, especially if they think you have no means to protect yourself.
Right.
Most criminals are cowards, you know, and that's just the truth. I mean, I've been in law enforcement. I know what I'm talking about here. And so they're much less prone to invade and violate if they know they're going to experience armed resistance. So I don't think Christians should walk around trying to be little cops or little vigilantes. We're not trying to overthrow governments, but we have a responsibility to protect innocent ones, people around us, loved ones, our families. We have that responsibility. Mm-hmm. So however a person wants to do that. Me being a cop for years, I put on a firearm in the same way that most people put a wallet in their back pocket, is no big deal for me. But if it's a little strange for listeners, then I say, go get some training. Training courses are out there.
Yeah.
Soon you'll be very comfortable with some type of a firearm that you can manage to have in your car, in your home, whatever your laws allow, even concealed. And just think about that if you haven't done it already. There's nothing unbiblical about protecting yourself with a sword.
Now, you mentioned not overthrowing governments. Let's take this in a different direction. What about obeying governments? Oftentimes, and we're seeing some examples recently I think most notably the mayor of Houston, who is lesbian and openly acknowledges it, recently demanded sermon notes from pastors in the area who had preached against a certain ordinance that the city of Houston was putting into place. The idea, of course, was to intimidate the pastors against speaking out on an issue that she felt they had no right to speak against.
Right.
A lot of Christians will say, well, look, government says you got to do something. You got to do something. Romans 13.
Right.
How do you respond?
Yeah. Well, Romans 13, in its context, is an amazing and beautiful passage of Scripture, because here's what it says. Paul's writing to the church where? At Rome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The capital of the Roman Empire, the empire that would eventually turn to vicious persecution of Christians. Paul would have his head cut off under the Emperor Nero. Mm-hmm. Where? At Rome. Yeah. But Paul's writing the church at Rome, and what he's saying, and here's the context. And he's saying, look, in the day-to-day affairs of life, Christianity is not here to overthrow governments. We're not here to depose the emperor. And besides, governments do play a role, even those that are not perfect, and there are no perfect ones until Jesus comes. But absent of government, it's anarchy. I mean, it's Stone Age.
Mm-hmm.
So even in relatively evil government is better than zero government at all.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what he's saying. He's saying, so look, on a day-to-day basis, as much as it is possible with you, live at peace. Live at peace with your brothers around you. Live at peace with people in the culture and society. Live at peace with the government. Obey the laws. Christians should not be seen as lawbreakers by character and nature. Okay? However, this same Paul would defy government officials and or religious officials who were often appointed by Rome or at least operated under the authority of Rome. So therefore, they were quasi-government officials. And he would defy their orders when they said, quit speaking this name of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Quit preaching this gospel. quit this healing in the name of Jesus. You know, get out of here with that. And Paul would say, look, I've got to obey God. I'm sorry. I'm a law-abiding citizen. I'm a Roman citizen. I give homage where homage is due. I give unto Caesar what is Caesar's. But look, what belongs to the Lord, I'm going to give to the Lord. And if you're going to put me in jail for that, then I'm willing to go to jail. And he did. Mm-hmm. And that is the context of Romans 13. Now, an illustration I like to use for folks that still struggle with this, I say, look, put yourself back 2,000 years ago in Rome. A Christian in Rome, or a citizen, they could not run for office, unless you were part of the upper aristocracy elite. I mean, some citizens obviously could mm-hmm. run for office, if you would, among their cliques and clans. But the average Joe Blow in the street could not run for office, couldn't vote for their representative, certainly couldn't vote for who the Caesar was going to be, mm-hmm. the emperor. So they had no voice at all. Now watch. Can you imagine people living 2,000 years ago in Paul's time having a cup of coffee, sitting there and saying, you know, wouldn't it be amazing? It would be like a piece of heaven if we could have a governmental system where it was kind of a we the people constitutional republic idea, mm-hmm. where we had rights that we understood that God gave us, and that we could run for office. We could have a say in who was going to be in office, who the authorities were going to be. Not only that, but we could redress our government. We could petition our government, especially when we thought that they were stepping out of line. And if they just wouldn't listen to us, we could actually peacefully vote them out of office and put new people in. Wouldn't that be a piece of heaven? And can you imagine these people 2,000 years ago sitting around talking about that under the Roman Empire?
Yeah, yeah.
And then zap! A bolt of lightning comes out of the sky and transports them back to the future, if you will, kind of style. Mm-hmm. It transports them to modern-day America, where guess what they have? A constitutional republic, First Amendment, and a Second Amendment that mm-hmm. says, hey, you can even arm yourself to protect your First Amendment.
That's right. The Romans were really good on sword control.
Oh, they really were.
Their conquered people's day were not to be armed.
Did not have swords under their cloaks.
That's right.
If you did, then you were crucified or mm-hmm. killed.
Yep.
Yeah. So they're transported to America, and they've got First Amendment rights. They can run for office. They can redress their government. They can petition their government. They can elect their leaders. They can get involved. They can encourage others. They can speak out politically. They can have meetings. They can have public assemblies. They can give speeches, and nobody goes to jail. And they're living there, and then they listen to millions of Christians around them living in this, saying, well, I'm not going to vote, you know, and I'm not going to get involved in it. After all, Romans 13 says we got to obey our government. Do you see how mm-hmm. out of context mm-hmm. that then becomes? Because, see, God has laid in our lap, Derek, in the United States of America, in the laps of Christians, the nation that potentially should be the greatest protection and blessing of Christians until Jesus himself comes, mm-hmm. with all of these rights and everything just given to us, and then we opt out. By the millions, we mm-hmm. refuse to be the salt and the light. God gives us the gift, and we go back to the scriptures, take them out of context. Well, you know, the Bible says we shouldn't be participating in government, and we ought to just obey the government. Okay. If that's the way you want to live, then you can be sure to lose the freedoms that you have. Mm-hmm. You can be sure to lose it.
Yeah. And that's, we could do a whole discussion on that, because I've kind of amended my thinking on that issue quite a bit. I for a while there, was looking at the story of Jesus being tempted after his 40 days in the desert, and Satan taking him up and saying, look, all the kingdoms of the earth are mine to give you. Just bow the knee to me.
Right.
And my take on that was, okay, Satan controls all the governments of the world. Should we even try to change the world through government? Right. Like, yeah, but you can't, you know, and again.
Yeah. You can salt it. You can salt and pepper
it. That's exactly right.
You can shine light on it.
And that's what I've come to, you know, and I moved away from that position because it was explained to me by a couple of young men who disagreed with me rather vociferously, and they made a really good point.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I hadn't thought of it that way. There are two paths to tyranny in this world. Path number one is to try to impose our view on unbelievers through force.
Right.
In other words, you have to, the Crusades.
Right.
Convert or die.
Or Islam.
Or Islam, right.
Yeah.
You get flip side of the coin.
Right.
A certain extent. I know I'm oversimplifying it there. But the other way to tyranny is to remove ourselves from the world and let the enemy have the field.
Exactly.
It is difficult to be salt.
Stay in the game, Christians.
Yes. Salt and light to a world from behind the walls of a compound.
Yeah, and the balance of it, Derek, and that's a brilliant point. The balance of it, as you're alluding to, is, look, we're not trusting in government to be our savior. And we're not suggesting that if Christians would just get involved in the political process, we would have utopia on earth. No, yeah. No. We're saying get involved, stay involved, never grow weary of doing good, mm-hmm. to hold back the tide of evil, yeah. that will flood in if you don't get involved.
Right, right.
If you want any semblance of freedom and opportunity for your children and grandchildren, you best be the generation that gets involved and stays involved. Not because you think government's going to save us, not because you think you can create a heaven on earth without Jesus, mm-hmm. but because...
That's New Age. That's the New Age movement.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know, exactly. And that's what pagans are trying to do through the governmental systems, is right. create their own little paradise and in their own image.
Right.
And of course, you say, well, I don't want that to happen. Then get involved
yeah.
in the gift that God has given you and don't squander it away. Mm-hmm. That's the point.
But the only way ultimately we're going to change lives and change the world is through changing hearts.
The gospel of Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And ultimately,
hearts and minds.
Yeah. And ultimately, yeah. it's only going to be when he returns that we actually see
Absolutely.
The world the way that we want it to be.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about the persecution then that comes from government, as we see government in America becoming increasingly hostile to the message of Jesus Christ and the exclusivity of Jesus Christ. I mean, you can't get around his statement, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me.
Right.
There are no other paths. We can't, as Christians, we can't
get around
that. No
other name given among men under heaven.
Exactly. Yeah. And our government is insisting that we be inclusive. I mean, my dad keeps getting smarter. He passed away about 10 years ago. He keeps getting smarter. He and a couple of fellows who had retired, the three of them got together at the church that they were attending, members of down in Greenville, South Carolina. And they were, basically took over the operation of the food pantry there. Mm-hmm. And with their business acumen, these three guys, dad was an engineer. The other fellow was a successful real estate guy, you know, used to making deals and whatever. But they were offered at one point through some government agency, all the free government cheese that they could possibly want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got all this stuff that we purchased and you guys can have it and distribute it. And they said no, because through their experience at having dealt with the government at various points in their careers, they realized that every free thing you get from the government comes with a steel cable attached. Every nickel has a steel cable attached.
There's a price.
Yeah. Right. The government, if you're going to take money dedicated to faith-based initiatives, you're going to have to play by government rules, which means you Christian churches are going to have to hire Wiccans or Muslims or whatever.
Or homosexuals.
People, or homosexuals.
Right.
You know, people who firmly disagree and reject the exclusivity claims of Jesus Christ and
right.
those of us who believe them. How do we in the church prepare for that type of government persecution? What do we need to do to be ready?
Yeah. And that's what my book is about, Be Thou Prepared. And one of the reasons, let me deal first with one of the reasons why we are where we are now mm-hmm. is because so many Christians for so many decades have opted out. Men of God have opted out in the pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
They don't preach and teach these principles that you and I are talking about today
from the
pulpit.
Or try to play nice. Let's go along and get along.
We want to appease the world, want to be friends with the world. Of course, we know what Jesus said about that, but.
Woe unto you when the world speaks well of you.
Yeah. And you and I were talking earlier about George Barna and his most recent poll of polling thousands of conservative pastors over mm-hmm. several years and discovering that 90% of these conservative pastors in America admitted that, look, we know the Bible speaks to these issues, but we're not going to preach about them. They're mm-hmm. being willfully disobedient, admitted in this poll, because why? They don't want to lose members. They don't want to lose money.
Yeah.
And so if the pulpits aren't preaching these truths,
people
and if the pews aren't living, and it's who's going to do it?
Yeah.
The government's not going to do it. The schools aren't going to do it. The media's not going to do it. Hollywood's not going to do it. The Supreme Court certainly isn't. We just found out. The Congress isn't. The White House isn't.
Yeah.
Well, then who is? And so, you know, you say, well, families will. Yeah, but if families aren't being instructed in the Word of God from the pulpit, then a lot of those families won't.
Right.
So the bottom line is we are where we are. Even talking, Derek, just decades ago, you and I would be surreal to be even talking about government persecution of Christians in America.
Mm-hmm.
Well, congratulations, folks, that decided to opt out. Now you've reaped what you're reaping what you've sown.
Yeah.
And you say, well, I'm just, you always got to vote for the lesser of two evils, so I'm not voting. Well, yeah, we always do vote for the lesser of two evils till Jesus comes. Exactly. I mean, you do, yeah. but I'd rather have the lesser evil than the worse evil. And you got to use it holding back. What you're doing is you're holding back the flood of evil,
right.
For your freedoms and for the ability to take the gospel to the world. Look, if the light in America goes out, and America's not, the epitome of all salvation, but think of it. Think of this world without an America tomorrow. I mean, we're the only nation in the world that has millions of people beating its borders down and its walls, breaking laws to come live here, mm-hmm. because it's one of the last places on earth where there's some semblance of freedom and hope and mm-hmm. prosperity and a chance to get and medical care and education, all of these things that people desire all over the world. And if that light goes out and freedom to worship, but the persecution angles are getting deeper and deeper in America. And it seems like so many millions of Christians have just opted out. They don't register to vote. If they do vote, they don't vote. Half of them don't vote. And, Romans 13 says, it's a lesser of two evils. That's godless. I'm going to tell you what's godless is to take the gift God gave you and squander it away and mm-hmm. refuse to be the salt and the light. That's my humble opinion. I know there are people that are listening that will disagree, but, that's why we are where we are, Derek. These things don't happen overnight and they don't happen accidentally. Where there is a vacuum, a void of light, darkness will flood in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's coming. So I'm telling Christians, look, you've been raised up for such a time as this. Be the salt. Be the light. Never grow weary of doing good. Stay engaged if you want those freedoms for you, for your children, and your grandchildren. Otherwise, we're going to lose it all.
Mm. Let's shift gears a little bit from your book, Be Thou Prepared, to just talk for a few minutes about your previous book, which really became a sensation. The Rabbi Who Found Messiah, about Yitzhak Kaduri, mm-hmm. Who was a... revered, I guess, is mm-hmm. an appropriate word.
The most venerated rabbi in modern Israel's history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Passed away at the age of 108.
Yeah.
In 2006.
Early 2006. January 2006.
In early 2006, upon his death, he released a message that created an awful lot of anticipation among among his followers. Tell mm-hmm. us about that message and how it was received.
Yeah, I will. And this story is fascinating, and I wrote the book from an objective journalistic standpoint, the good, the bad, the ugly, the ups and downs, ins and outs. It's all in the book. I'm not trying to play the man's apologist. There's a story there that's astounding. It's fascinating. It's apropos to biblical truths and even prophecy. So the story had to be told, because the Israeli media and the American media covered it up. Mm-hmm. And for our listeners that don't have a clue what we're talking about, Yitzhak Kaduri, here's the story. Yitzhak Kaduri, 108 years old, died in January of 2006. But he wasn't some little obscure rabbi tucked away in the bowels of Jerusalem that lived to be this old man. No, when he died at his funeral, the president of Israel delivered the eulogy. 250 to 300,000 people showed up. According to media reports, they had to shut Jerusalem down for 2 days. The largest funeral in modern Israel's history. In fact, you might have to go back to the time of King David to have a bigger funeral in that area of the world for a leader in Israel. This guy was huge, adored by millions around Israel and around Europe and even in the United States among Jews. Mm-hmm. But he was in the land when it was called Palestine. He was there before Israel was born. He went through all of that. But right before his death in October of 2005, he went to his synagogue and he ran a yeshiva, a rabbinical training school, but he went to his synagogue attached to his yeshiva and he gave a Yom Kippur message. And he said in that message, I have had an encounter with Messiah. Now, Jews are looking for Messiah, so he had everybody's attention. And he said, and I know his name. I know who he is. And I'm going to put his name in a note, and I'm going to have it sealed, and I want the note opened 1 year after my death and posted. And he had a huge ministry, as I just said, most venerated rabbi. And they had a big internet ministry, big staff. His son, who's 80-something years old, ran the thing. Kind of like a Billy and Franklin Graham thing, mm-hmm. where the father's aging, but the son comes behind him and runs the ministry, this big ministry. So, and he was the Billy Graham of the Orthodox Jews, if you will.
Right.
He's as well known and loved over there as Billy Graham would be among evangelicals here.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the stature of this guy. So he says, I've had an encounter. I've had a, I don't think he used the word visitation, but an encounter. I know I've seen the Messiah and I've had this revelation. I know who he is. I'm going to put his name in a note. I want it posted. And then he said, secondly, he said, it's been revealed to me the Messiah is coming soon. And he didn't say exactly what that, when that was, but he said, but it's been revealed to me that Messiah will not come until after Ariel Sharon dies. Now, when he spoke that in 2005 in October, Ariel Sharon was still the prime minister, the 11th mm-hmm. prime minister of Israel. No severe health problems that anybody knew of at that time.
Right.
But within a few weeks, Ariel Sharon, January of 2006, just a couple months, he suffers a coma, a stroke, mm-hmm. and goes into a coma. And that coma, which they couldn't have known then, but now we know, lasted 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
In a coma for 8 years, just weeks after Kaduri said the Messiah won't come until Sharon dies. So if this is from God, this revelation, then Sharon was being used as kind of a marker. Okay, now watch. Within weeks of Kaduri saying that in his yeshiva in October, not only did Sharon have a stroke and go into a coma in early January 2006, but Kaduri himself suffered physical problems, went into the hospital, got pneumonia, mm-hmm. and died when? Late January 2008, in the same month.
Just a few weeks after.
Just a few weeks. Yeah. Just a few weeks. So now there's this monumental anticipation. People are looking at this and saying, wow, how weird is that? How surreal is that, that this man on Yom Kippur is giving a message and giving a, and then he says, I know who Messiah is. And everybody's going, well, tell us. Nope, not till a year after I'm dead. Mm-hmm. Well, you're 108. That could be 50 more years the way you're living. You know, I mean, you know, or it could be tomorrow. I mean, they didn't know, but, and he couldn't have known that he was going to die in just a few weeks, but he says, after I'm dead, a year after I'm dead. And then he says, and also know that the Messiah that I know who he is and who he, when he's coming, he will come after Sharon dies. Okay. Yeah. So 2006 comes January. Sharon's in a coma. It'll last for 8 years, but nobody knows that then, of course. Kaduri goes in the hospital. He dies. Then they have the funeral. 300,000 people. Jerusalem mm-hmm. shut down. President of Israel speak. I mean, huge, huge. World media is reporting. I remember watching it on Fox News, portions of it. They reported on it on Fox News in America. Mm-hmm. That's how influential this guy was. Well, so that year, the anticipation's building and building. Sure. Not among Christians, by the way, because Christians couldn't have imagined what he was going to write.
Right,
and nobody, you know, most Christians didn't even know this guy.
Didn't know who he was.
No, didn't know who he was. But the Jews, especially Orthodox, they were looking because this was the kind of their Billy Graham, and he was going to tell them the name of Messiah. And they've been looking for Messiah for thousands of years. Okay, we can't wait. So the note is opened. It's posted on his website. Because it was written cryptically. Mm-hmm. Now this rabbi, Orthodox, was into that denomination of Orthodox Judaism that practices Kabbalah.
Right.
A lot of mysticism, and we'll talk about that later. And so he had a mystical way of writing. He would write cryptically and then leave hints as to how to decode the messages. And that's very common in that part of mystic Judaism. So the note is posted, and here's what it said in English. He said, concerning the letter abbreviation of his name, and I'm going to emphasize his name. His who? Well, the mm-hmm. Messiah, because that's what he promised to deliver, the name. Mm-hmm. He says, concerning the letter abbreviation of his name, he shall lead his people and prove that the word and the law are valid. That was what the note said. Now, to a Jew, that sounds very messianic. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing controversial about that at all. He shall lead his people. Well, yeah, that's what Messiah's going to
do.
He'll prove when he comes that the word and the law is valid, that it's not a lie, like the pagans say. Well, yes, that's what Messiah will do. Okay, our rabbi has had this revelation. They put it up, and look what our rabbi said. But then they're looking at it, and they're saying, but, you know, he said he would leave the name of Messiah. But see, students in his yeshiva, they knew what he had been teaching to them secretly, privately. And they saw that note. And by the way, that note was reported on by Israel Today and News First Class, both of them right out of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Front page magazine cover of Israel Today. News First Class, secular totally, and all in Hebrew, but they're reporting. I think it's called News One now. But they took photocopies or screenshots of the note. And there's screenshots in my book, by the way, so you can see it with your own eyes. But after some months of that being up on the site, some of the yeshiva students said, you know, he said he was going to leave the name of Messiah. And if you'll look at that note carefully, you'll see that he gave you the clue. The name is there. And so the Orthodox Jews started looking. Well, the first sentence said, concerning the letter abbreviation of his name. And they said, he's written an acrostic like he's done before. Because the next part of that sentence where it said, he shall lead his people and prove the word and the law are valid. All right, in English, I just spoke a mouthful of words. Mm-hmm. But in Hebrew, that whole mouthful of words I just spoke in English is only six Hebrew words. So they took those six Hebrew words and they lined them up top to bottom. And they took the first letter of each of those six mm-hmm. Hebrew words, because it said concerning the letter abbreviation. Here's mm-hmm. his name. And so they took the letter, you know, of each one. And those six words, the six letters spelled in Hebrew, Yehoshua, mm-hmm. the long form of Yeshua.
Yeah.
And as we would transliterate into English through the Greek and the Latin into the English,
yes.
we'd wind up with what we call Jesus.
Yeah.
Is the Messiah. It rocked the world. His ministry was furious. The people in the Orthodox Jews, you know, they despised the name Jesus and the mm-hmm. New Testament documents and Christianity for good reason in some ways.
Well, yeah, there's a lot been done to yeah. the Jews over the last 2,000 years.
In the name of Jesus,
yes,
yeah,
yes.
yes, godless things. And,
yes.
and but they despise it. So they ripped the note down. I found out later through a firsthand source, they destroyed it. Then they began to deny it. But of course, they had it in their custody. They're the ones that posted on the website. They're the ones that were bragging about it, even had a little featured story about it until it was decoded. And they saw that the name he gave was Jesus, the name of the real Messiah, who he said would not come until after Ariel Sharon died. And Ariel Sharon died January 2014. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's the basic story. I know you'll have a lot more questions, but that's
well,
the basic
there
story.
Is. But in the interest of time, because yeah. we're kind of yeah. up against the clock here, I like to keep the shows to kind of a manageable, yeah. manageable bite-sized length.
Yeah.
We know I think and know the source of certain actions and how they're motivated. And you know, longtime listeners of you from the bunker know that in a previous program with Dr. Michael Bennett, we talked about. A Kabbalistic Judaism and
yes.
Some of the practices involved, which to my eye are indistinguishable from magic, which
oh, yeah.
God has said some very specific things about.
Right.
But the fruit of this note, the fruit of this revelation
mm-hmm.
that Rabbi Kaduri has given, assuming that is correct, what kind of impact has this had in
yeah.
Israel over the last 10 years?
It's had an amazing impact, especially largely through a ministry called Messiah of Israel Ministry, Zev Parat, Z-E-V, Zev Parat, is the Messianic rabbi in charge of that ministry. He was born and raised in Israel, speaks Hebrew, speaks English beautifully, speaks some other languages, brilliant man. But he was raised to be a rabbi. His dad was a rabbi. His grandfathers were rabbis. His great-grandfathers were rabbis. By the way, that family knew Yitzhak Kaduri personally.
Mm.
And so Zev Parat knows students. By the way, there are 11 of Yitzhak Kaduri's former students that are now Jesus-loving, born-again Christians because of the teachings they were getting secretly in the yeshiva. And then, of course, now that the note has been exposed and been written about and a movie made about it, etc. But through the book and the movie, finally delivered into the hands of Zev Parat, who was desperately telling Jews all over Israel about Kaduri's revelation, but most of them never heard because the media covered it up and
yeah.
his ministry covered it. They destroyed the note. But, you know, we've got, thanks to internet, we've got the screen captures. They're in my
yeah.
book. We've got all the story. We've got all the interviews that was done by Israel Today, et cetera, et cetera. It's all in my book. And so he's got the book and the movie, and now they are leading Orthodox Jews, men and women, to Jesus Christ all over Israel. He's taking huge heat for it
mm-hmm.
because the Orthodox Jews, they have a counter-missionary movement, they call it,
mm-hmm.
counter-missionary organization. It's kind of like in America, we got the ACLU that just kind mm-hmm. of seems to counter everything Christian.
Yeah.
Well, in Israel, they have
during the Reformation, the Roman Catholic Church had the counter-reformation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in Israel, they've got the same kind of thing. And so he's got death threats. He's been spit on. He's rocks thrown at him when he goes into communities. They know who he is and what he's doing. He's leading Jews to Christ, and he's using these materials. Now, my materials are not written as an evangelistic tract, you know, but here's how he does it. After they see the cover and it's a picture of Yitzhak Kaduri, they say, is that Kaduri? Yeah. And he says, you know, this is the greatest rabbi. Oh, we know. Yes, yes, yes. He says, but I'm going to tell you something the media covered up. Kaduri said he knew the Messiah. They said, really? Really? What? We didn't know that. And he opens up the book. He shows them the note and he shows them the cryptic code
mm-hmm.
concerning a letter abbreviation. And then he says, he points to the first letter of each word. He says, look at these. And they look and their jaw hits the ground. And
yeah.
they say, Yehoshua, why would he say that? And then Zev will take them to Isaiah 53, Psalm 22, then into the new testament. He eases into there. Mm-hmm. He shows them others, Jeremiah 21, 21, 23, 23, about the new covenant I'll make with you, et cetera, in the last days. And he begins to say, now, this greatest rabbi that ever lived, he leaves the name Jesus. He discovered what anybody who would study these would know. And they're giving their life to Christ.
That's
and of course the Orthodox.
Remarkable.
You know, the Orthodox movement can't stand it, and they've really raised a stink. But the book and the movie has opened it all back up. It's there, the story that never dies, and I think it's a very prophetic part of the times in which we're living.
Yeah, that is that is remarkable. I mean, I knew Sharon and I knew a young family in the St. Louis area that attended the church we were in, who had come out of the Amish community in Northeast Missouri. That was extremely difficult because of they had to basically cut. Not only make a theological decision, a decision to accept Jesus Christ as he's described in the Bible and cast right. aside all of the rules that have been imposed on the legalistic right. system that's been imposed on the Amish community, but they also had to cut all of their family ties, all of their social connections in the community. Right. And I imagine the same is true for the Orthodox Jews that accept Jesus Christ.
Yes, it's traumatic. Yeah. Yeah. Zev Peratt, he's a grown man. I guess he's in his early 50s now. His family has disowned him.
Yeah.
I mean, in his 50s, his blood family won't even speak to him
yeah.
once he gave his life to Christ.
It is difficult. And I've even known people who find it impossible to leave a specific church where mm-hmm. the teachings have gone astray mm-hmm. because it would mean having to tell their friends, their family members, that mm-hmm. I cannot be a part of this congregation anymore,
right.
Which the family members hear differently. What they hear is a rejection of them, not right. of the, well, right. what, you know, what makes you so smart? Yeah. So it's extremely difficult,
it
but
is.
The fruit of this, is just remarkable that it's having any impact at all,
right.
because I can only imagine that in that community, as with the Amish community, knowing that you're going to be essentially cast out, not just from right. the synagogue, but you're not going to see your family, that's, right. that's terrible. But, And you know, it's got to be such a burden on Zev, knowing that his family is still bound by tradition, and by those other chains, those familial and social connections that they just cannot give up.
And just think about it, Derek. These traditions and chains you speak of, as far as rejection of Christ as Messiah, are 2,000 years old.
Yeah.
So it's not like just some new religion that's gone cultish or something. This right. 2,000 years of rejecting Christ as Messiah and coming through this thick, you know, Jewish tradition and the Jewish family and the Jewish faith. And then all of a sudden you say, listen, I believe Jesus is Messiah. What? And one of the things they'll say, you're dead to us. You're dead to us.
Yep.
And if you go to the New Testament scriptures, Derek, you see, that's what the early church had to confront. That's why they were selling things that they had, giving to the other members. Why? They were losing jobs. They were losing families. They were losing family businesses. Some of them were being persecuted, threatened with death. The Jews killed Stephen. Stephen was a Jew, but they killed him because he was preaching Jesus. And you know, so the early church had to deal with preparing and helping.
Yes.
And, you know, they had disasters, famines and earthquakes and all of that. Plus, they were being persecuted. Then the Roman government would eventually start persecuting them. The early church had to deal with all of that. I pray we don't have to deal with it in America, but it looks like we might be headed back towards some of that. But this Yitzhak Kaduri story is fascinating. It's astounding.
It sure is. Carl, your books, Be Thou Prepared, The Rabbi Who Found Messiah, your radio show, Freedom Friday with Carl Gallups. Where do people find out more about your work and what you're doing?
I've made that very easy. Just go to carlgallups.com, CarlGallups, carlgallups.com. And there you'll find links to the church I pastor, the radio show I do, all the thousands of videos we've made, teachings, TV shows and radio shows that I'm on. A lot of those are archived. Everything, Bible study materials, news events. I'm also a commentator for WND.com. I'm in a lot of headline articles there, usually at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, and a lot of those are archived there. So carlgallups.com. My books are there, how to order my books, a whole book page, the movie about the book. It's all there, carlgallups.com.
And watch for Carl on several future episodes of Skywatch TV, which
thanks.
Is why we're blessed to have him here in the bunker today.
Yeah.
Carl, a real pleasure, real blessing getting to know you.
My
this
pleasure.
Has been really check the show notes at vftb.net.
Really enjoyed
the link to Carl Gallup's
website. Thank you so much. It's my honor.
And a place where you can
do
it again
soon.
The book.
God bless you.
Be Thou Prepared. September is National Preparedness Month. And it is time to remember that perhaps we, as Christians, being prudent and wanting to prepare for unexpected emergencies so that we can be of assistance to our neighbors in need, should put aside some extra non-perishable food, perhaps stock up on wood. We plan to stock up on firewood this winter. We haven't yet. Need to get the fireplace of the new place we're living in. Double check just to make sure it's up to code. I believe it is, but best to be safe and rather than find out the hard way. Just in case, if things happen and we can heat the place and also cook. Well, I mean, we got a really nice grill. I suppose we could cook there with fire if we had to. But anyway, just being ready in the event of an emergency is prudent. And there are some who have commented on the interviews that I've already posted to Skywatch TV, the daily updates with Carl, that we shouldn't be concerned with preparedness because we're going to be raptured out before the tribulation. And regardless of how you feel about the tribulation, and I do tend to believe that, yes, we will be out of here before. Now, let me tend to believe. That's kind of waffling. I do believe that we will be out of here before things get really bad as far as the Great Tribulation is concerned, okay? Call it a pre-tribulation position. But that has nothing to do with natural disasters that occur. I mean, we haven't seen the rapture occur yet, and within the last decade, we've had Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Ivan, Ike. We've had massive earthquakes in other places around the world. We had the tsunami in the tsunamis in Indonesia and in Japan that killed tens of thousands in each case. So there are things that will happen this side of the rapture, whenever the rapture occurs, for which it would be wise to be prepared. In fact, within an hour's drive of where I sit right now, we had the tragic tornadoes not long ago in Joplin, Missouri. So being prepared is just prudent. It is just prudent. And again, it's not so that you can just laugh at the rest of the world while it goes to hell. It's so that you're prepared to be a blessing to those in need. And by sharing, perhaps have an opportunity to share the good news of Jesus Christ. Elsewhere in the world, things continue to spiral in the Middle East. Kurdish rebels killed 16 police officers, or 16 soldiers just a couple of days ago, and 14 more police. I think the total was 17, last time I checked. Over the weekend, the Turks have responded with airstrikes against Kurdish positions and actually sent their military inside the border of Iraq to hit at positions held by the PKK. That is really odd. Now, of course, Russia also sending troops into Syria. We reported on this on Skywatch TV and was sent a link to an article by a couple of folks, linked to an article at RT, which, of course, is Russia Today. It is to the Russian government what Fox News is and other American media sources are to the White House, denying that Russia was there. But then over the weekend, Vladimir Putin said, yeah, we are there, and our commitment is pretty serious. So intelligence estimates that the Russians may have potentially as many as 2,000 or 3,000 soldiers by the time they're finally deployed. They're also reportedly sending a nuclear submarine into the Mediterranean to Syria, a submarine that reportedly carries 20 ICBMs and about 200 nuclear warheads. So things are getting dicey there. Over the weekend, Secretary of State Kerry called Foreign Minister Lavrov in Moscow to warn against being in Syria, saying that it could make things more difficult, could lead to greater loss of life and more refugees, which is interesting because if we're all about the same goal, which is stopping the Islamic State and its spread, then you'd think that having Russia as part of the coalition would be a good thing. We would want them there because the sooner we stop the Islamic State, the sooner, well, I mean, the more lives are saved and the sooner the refugee flow to Europe stops. And we've seen reports coming out of Hungary and Austria and Germany of just chaos as those nations are being overwhelmed by a flood of refugees. And one report from Hungary, a witness said that, there are people there from Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya, other places around the globe, and they're throwing away all their papers so they can all claim to be from Syria because the word has gotten around that the Syrians are considered refugees and are getting preferential treatment. A lot of those folks clearly, or apparently, I should say, apparently not fleeing danger, just wanting to go somewhere that's wealthier so they can have a better life, which is also understandable. But, you know, nations can only absorb so many incomers from a different social background, different cultural background, different religious background before the nation is no longer the nation it was. So, things are all stirred up out there. It's strange watching what's happening, but maybe it's only because I'm seeing it through the microscope of 24-hour news cycle. I mean, there were massive refugee flows. Well, we look back 100 years, look at the Armenian genocide, which the Turks still deny. This has been happening all through history. Maybe it only seems worse today just because, A, I'm paying close attention. B, it's a time in which I live, and of course, I'm more sensitive to it. We tend to forget history pretty quickly. And C, again, we've got news organizations, 24-hour cable networks, and of course, the internet, all competing for attention, looking for stories and clicks. So, just pray, Lord, how long, O Lord, come quickly. Again, keep an eye on what's happening there. This week, of course, is the anniversary of 9/11. This would be 14 years come this Friday. And a Twitter account linked to the Islamic State or an Islamic State follower has been tweeting a threat under the hashtag 11 September and hashtag Illinois. I tend to ignore things like this mostly because the goal of a group that's built on terror is to create, you know, terror. So not trying to spread that. And just bear in mind, take this for what it's worth and bear in mind that followers of the Islamic State have been tweeting things like this all summer long. So it could be just blowing smoke. And I pray that that's all it is. And one final thing. I just thought this was a couple of final things here. Another Chinese chemical plant exploded. That's the third in a month. You know, one is a tragedy. Two is a coincidence. Three is, what's going on here? And there are some conspiracists who are pointing a finger at the United States, saying it's because they tried to devalue their currency relative to the dollar. I just don't see that makes any sense. I honestly don't. The Chinese have submarines that have been able to sneak up to the West Coast without being detected. I don't think the United States is going to risk a confrontation of that magnitude over something as silly. Well, maybe not silly, but over something like a devaluation of the Chinese yuan. I just don't think that's rational. Researchers, by the way, researchers in the University of Buckingham, shifting gears, announced this past week that they found alien life. And they're calling it the first ever image of an alien or extraterrestrial organism. It's a grain of salt with what looks like a little, horned protuberance sticking out the side of the salt grain. This was collected by a powerful magnet attached to a high altitude balloon. And University of Buckingham, even though they're saying that this is the first image of an alien, they made the same claim back in March, in February, last October, and the September before that. And these are little, that look like dust particles, basically. Nothing in the article suggests that the image, that the organism, quote unquote, in the image has any metabolic process, DNA, or anything that we would identify as essential to life of any kind. So the point that they're trying to make is that life was created in outer space and then seeded here on planet Earth by hitching a ride on a comet or an asteroid, smashing into the primordial soup, and, 5 billion years later, here we are, me talking and you presumably listening. It, of course, doesn't answer the question, where did that organism come from that got into our atmosphere if it came from outer space? You know, what created it? And, of course, the answer is turtles all the way down. Our Bible study, the Gilbert House Fellowship, now into the book of Deuteronomy. And we've been posting those weekly Bible studies, 43 episodes now, to gilberthouse.org each Sunday morning, mid to late morning, depending on when we feel like we've been prepared or when we have prepared sufficiently. Hope you'll join us again this Sunday morning as we upload a new study getting through 2 to 3 chapters at a week, just going through it verse by verse and trying to exposit it as best we can. Neither of us claims to be a Bible scholar, but we do take the responsibility seriously and do our best to prepare and try to show how verses in the Bible, passages in the Bible, all interconnect front to back. It is a whole, and you cannot extract individual lines, individual paragraphs, and build a whole doctrine on it. Nor can you extract passages out of context and use it to disprove the Bible. Had an interesting internet exchange with a couple of atheists over the weekend who were being very critical of the Kentucky County Clerk Kim Davis, who is still in jail as of this recording, for refusing to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples, and accusing her of being just like ISIS or anyone who wants to impose Sharia law because she's trying to impose her religious views on other people. It's like, well, hold on. There's a significant difference here because, you know, Sharia law dictates that homosexuals be executed. Lest we forget, the Islamic State celebrated the Supreme Court ruling June 28th by throwing 4 gay men off a roof and then tweeting the pictures under the hashtag Love Wins. They still don't see the distinction. So anyway, but atheists love to dig into the Bible, find a passage, especially from the Old Testament, and use that to disprove, to prove, anyway, in their eyes, that Christians are murderous religious zealots. Jesus told us to expect it. It's still a little eye-opening when it happens. Skywatch TV continues our series on preparedness. Carl Gallup's, in fact, coming up this coming Tuesday night on the Christian Television Network. That would be Tuesday, the 15th of September. The program airs at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Central Time on the Christian Television Network. That's DirecTV 376, Dish Network Channel 267, Glory Star Satellite Channel 117, and it follows our friends at Prophecy Watchers. Again, Tuesday night, 9:30 Eastern, 8:30 Central Time. We appreciate your review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you happen to find A View from the Bunker. And we appreciate a like if you stop by the View from the Bunker Facebook page, which is where you can discuss this and all of our programs. A View from the Bunker is a production of Gilbert House and released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod. Competech.com is his website. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.